what I want to say is, if you are transitioning out of the military and you want to find yourself into a leadership position with a company, one of the things you need to do is go research that company. Find out their LinkedIn page, find them out online, and go to their about section. Click through their about section, get to their philosophy, and get to their core values. Read that. Find out if that resonates with you, because you cannot fake the funk, and those people will understand that, and they'll realize that. And when you're in that interview, speak to answering the questions from the interviewer along the lines of what you've learned about that company's core values. And if those jive with you and your answers are in line with their core values, there's a very good chance you'll be getting a call.
Hello, and welcome to the new Mission Career Transition Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Caprellian, and I'm joined by my co-host, sister, and talent management pro, Alexandra Caprellian. We interview service members that transition to new careers, DoD representatives, and civilian HR professionals to provide you with lessons learned you won't get in a transition class and to help you transition with confidence. In this episode, we interview Dan Pierce, a Marine officer and prior enlisted Marine who had experience in aviation maintenance and then became a combat engineer. He got out as a company grade officer and transitioned into the recruiting industry, where he works to help find talent to support the manufacturing industry in the United States. He's got a great story, and I'm very happy to share it with you, so stay tuned. Dan Pierce, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, yeah, thank you for having me.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for being here.
Very excited to have you on. We were stationed together with MWSS 171, that's Marine Wing Support Squadron 171 in Iwakuni, Japan. That's where I met Dan. And Dan kind of went off on a different path. He got out and he's doing great things. And I'm really excited to talk about those great things. Plus, your background as a recruiter, a professional headhunter, you have insight into, you know, what mistakes people make and some probably really good success stories. So I'm excited to have those conversations with you today.
Well, thank you, Chris. Yeah, it's exciting to be here. I appreciate it.
To start off, if you could tell our listeners a little bit about where you came from, how you got into the military, and give us a quick overview that leads up to perhaps your last duty station.
Yeah, absolutely. So growing up, I was a Navy brat. My dad was a career Navy officer. He did a little over 20 years. I was actually born in Panama, in Central America. And from there, we ended up moving to California, Spain, Italy, Kansas, Texas, Nebraska. Just did a whole standard tour over his, 20 years during my 18 years. And when we ended up getting to a point where I could enlist, that's exactly what I wanted to do. And at 17 years old, with my parents' permission, we walked into the recruiting office, and I'd always wanted to be a Marine, so had the privilege there to sign the papers. And I ended up leaving for boot camp 2 weeks after graduating in May of 2007. So for me, being a Marine was, something I'd always wanted to do. There was no deviating from that plan growing up. And, as much as my dad, being a good Navy officer, would sit down with the, the pay scale charts and talk to me about college and say, "Now look, son, you could do the Marines after becoming an officer, and look how much better it could be for you here, 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 and here." I said, "Yeah, but I still want to enlist, I wanted to get the show going." So
was it, if I could interrupt, was it the travel and adventure benefit tag that you picked? did the Marine recruiter, the Marine recruiters have these benefit tags to identify what the core needs are of an individual? I'm not sure which benefit tags, if you can remember which ones you picked.
I probably all of them. I was just the easiest sell. I just walked in and I said, "Where do I sign?" And that is pretty much how it went, to the point where they said, "Well, we can get you started on a 5-year contract." And I said, "More is better." And I went with an aviation option after taking the ASVAB. So uncertain as to where I was really going with that, I thought that being a Marine was being a Marine, and I really didn't give much thought to the day job. And it was, I look back on it and I, I'm glad I really didn't put that much thought into it. I was just accepting everything as it comes. And, you know, I treated it as a box of chocolates. And that was kind of the theme of my Marine Corps career, I suppose. I just took it as it came, and I really thoroughly enjoyed it. But it did come with some surprises. And, you know, the first of which was being after basic training and MCT out on the West Coast, I kind of thought I'd be going to Pensacola for the next step, you know, to go do aviation training. And the first surprise was, no, I'm going to New River, North Carolina, right there in Camp Lejeune. So mm-hmm. that was a bit of a shock. Like it was a deviation from the Top Gun kind of theme that I was going to be doing, you know, sand volleyball pits yeah. and stuff. And
nice beaches, cocktails. Yeah.
Right. So
I said, River isn't that bad though. It's just further from the beach and maybe, yeah, not quite as sunny, but.
Yeah. Right. And it had these things called CH-53 helicopters, which I wasn't even aware was a thing. It turns out they're like the size of a house and can lift one. So, you know, they sent me over to New River, North Carolina, and I learned how to work on CH-53s there for about 3 or 4 months as a flight line mechanic. And, you know, I'm 18 years old, barely having changed the oil in my car, and I'm learning how to change, you know, rotor blades on this massive machine. And it was awesome, though. You know, I was living the dream. And the next surprise came when everyone got their assignments and they were going out to different fleet units. And I was selected with another of my peers to go to HMX-1. This was another thing I had not heard of. Wow. But apparently the Marine Corps had a helicopter squadron akin to how the Air Force has Air Force One. We have Marine One. So I had been selected for presidential service. Now, this was, you know, a shock to me, but it was an awesome opportunity. And I had to live the dream. I'm telling you, I from 18 to 23, those 5 years, single, young, and just open to what the world is willing to offer, I truly enjoyed being a helicopter mechanic and crew chief on CH-53s, and then eventually on VH-60 Novembers, which is the VIP platform of the Black Hawk used for presidential support.
So wherever the president went, you ended up going. Is that how it works?
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. You know, at first, you had to work your way into that, right? You know, it's not the PFC, right? So I had to scrub some bellies and grease some stuff and, you know, learn the job first, right? And then eventually, you worked your way up to it. I mean, it was awesome. One day, you'd be in California supporting in LA. And then you'd fly 3 days back, get to your barracks room, touch your head to the pillow, and then the door kicks open and says, everyone who was just on that trip, get back up. We're going to support something that just took place off the Gulf. It was an emergency crisis response, actually. I think that was the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. We had, and that's the one I'm referring, right? Like that was a real life thing. The president wanted to be there. It wasn't planned. It wasn't scheduled, but got up, got back in the helicopter and flew south. And, you know, it was, what else would I be doing from 18 to 23, you know?
Travel and adventure.
So it was great. And I learned a lot of good skill sets and, made a lot of good lifelong friends. And, it came to the point where around that fourth year, all of my friends from back home were beginning to graduate and have degrees and move on to another thing. So I decided to get out, the first time and pursue my degree. So I got accepted to Virginia Tech, and loaded a U-Haul and drove, you know, 4 hours from Quantico to Blacksburg and had an awesome experience down at Virginia Tech. Got really involved with it. Enjoyed that 4-year experience of just being a traditional college student. Well, I guess I was a veteran. So, from 23, you know, plus 4 years, it was a little bit odd to be 23 amongst 18-year-olds, in a college setting, but yeah, to them, maybe for me, I really enjoyed it. So I had a great time there. I served as a student body president for the Student Veterans of America chapter there at Virginia Tech. And I worked at the Veterans Services Office and really got involved. One of the things that happened while I was at Virginia Tech, two great things. One, I felt as if my time in the Marine Corps was not done. I ran into a lot of young aspiring officers that really motivated me. These guys that were wrapping up their junior and senior years and going back in or into the Corps the first time. And I decided that, hey, man, this is worth another shot for me. So sure enough, graduated, commissioned. And the second thing that came out of Virginia Tech was meeting my wife. And, you know, had I never had gone this route, I never would have met her. So that's one of those kind of box of chocolate things, right? Like I just took it as it came and I had a great experience, met my wife, got my commission and rolled right back into Quantico. I did TBS and then I decided I wanted to go see the ground side.
For those of you listening, if you're not a Marine, every officer goes through TBS or the basic school where they learn to be provisional rifle platoon commanders. So you learn how to be a quasi grunt. And then those that go on to be grunt officers, they go through advanced training. So
yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I really enjoyed the time there, met a lot of great people, and felt a calling to go groundside. And I put combat engineer right there, 1302, at the top of the list. And I was so stoked when I got it. You know, I was one out of five slots or something like that. It was a very coveted position and I, you know, I was fortunate to get it. And, that other box of chocolates thing, right? Like I thought I was going ESB or CEB or something like that. And sure enough, I got an MWSS and I went right back to the wing. So, great experience though. Wouldn't trade it for the world. I really enjoyed that opportunity to go to Japan and, you know, being in Iwakuni was phenomenal. My wife and I thoroughly enjoyed that opportunity to spend time over there. And I really did enjoy my position as a combat engineer platoon commander and eventually company commander. I got to do so many things and meet so many people and travel and build schools in Thailand and, you know, just so many wonderful things that wouldn't be afforded to me had I not gone back in and tried something new. But from there, of course, I said to the monitor when the time came to get orders, place me anywhere. You know, I just ask that you please do it on the East Coast because my wife is a veterinarian and California has some very strict rules about veterinarians coming to practice who have not been practicing. And because of her time with me in Japan, she had not been practicing her, you know, her veterinary license to the degree which she could step in and start working in California. So the moral of the story is I told the monitor, location matters most, please put me on the East Coast. Not really caring what the job would be. And it turned out that I got orders to MCRD Paris Island out here in Beaufort, South Carolina.
Marine Corps Recruit Depot, where we make Marines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And
a tough assignment, you know, but they look for, sure. They look for good officers and good Marines to, go do that duty. So good on you.
Sure. Yeah. And we moved into a house sight unseen, flying in from Japan, driving down to Beaufort, South Carolina. And this was January of 20. And anyone who, you know, knows very recent history, 2020 changed a lot of things, right? A pandemic rolled in. But for me, it also brought a wonderful addition to my family in that my first daughter was born in March 2020. So here I am, Beaufort, South Carolina. And, you know, I'm rounding my 10th year, of service in active duty, right? Just pinned on captain. It was at this point of service where a lot of things had come to a point. It was a culmination of a lot of realities. You know, one is this is going to be my life, right? And the box of chocolate surprises, that were once so embraced by me previously, could be pretty detrimental to my family moving forward. And that's something that a lot of people have to wrestle with. And, you know, most folks come to that point at that 10-year mark. But for me in this instance, I love the Marine Corps so much that I came back, that I almost couldn't even believe that I was considering leaving. But in the end, when I put everything on the table, it was a 51%, 49% decision. You know, it was a very thin margin for me. I love the Corps. I love what I did. I'm proud of, you know, the time I spent in the Marines and the Marines I got to serve with. But it no longer aligned with my professional ambitions and what I had desired for my family.
So how, if I may, how far out were you from the date that you separated, where you made this kind of mental decision to transition out of the Marine Corps?
Yeah, good question. So this was, I had done back-to-back recruit cycles, I think starting in June, and each cycle is about 3 months. So it was roughly December timeframe that I had a break, a point in time where I could kind of lift my head up. And I told myself I wasn't going to make any decisions until I was on leave for a better part, right? So I think I had about 2 weeks or so before we picked up another cycle, and we picked up the day after Christmas, another cycle of recruit training, right? And in that period of time, maybe that 2 to 4 weeks or so that I had off, I really took some time for reflection. And I talked to my wife about it. And at first it was just kind of I was curious, you know, as to what her thoughts were and if I could even really truly do it, right? It wasn't even so much of a concrete, I'm leaving. It was more like, let's put everything on the table and see what that looks like. But this is where it was. It was December of 2021, I think. No, 2020. Yeah, 2020. I basically came to the conclusion after using a series of different resources, both, you know, colleagues, peers, people who've gotten out, people who've stayed in, my own dad who did 21 plus, right, who encouraged me to go in both times. I leaned on him for advice as well. I asked a lot of different people for advice and listened and just kind of sought that answer out and made the decision. And when I went back in for that last cycle, I was a year out from when I would be able to exit the Marine Corps. And I knew that my decision was made. And I went and I told my battalion commander and my, you know, XO.
And that gave you a year out to start leveraging the resources for your transition.
Right.
What resources did you leverage for your transition? What were the actions that you took?
I mean, there's just so much out there. That's one thing that, you know, I have to mention is that I am very thankful to my command. I am very thankful to that battalion commander and my XO. I told them that, and they met me with, respect and dignity of someone who you fear a lot of things about going into that scenario and telling your command that I'm here to commit career suicide, for lack of better words, right? They were very gracious. And the battalion XO was actually the first one who mentioned something to me about SkillBridge. He said, is that something that you'd be interested in? And I, you know, that to me was, wow. Yeah, absolutely. I'd be interested in it, but I got a lot of things to start considering. So to answer your question, number one, my command, I give them full respect and credit due to that. Two, American Corporate Partners is something that I leveraged personally. And there's a couple different things out there like this. Veterati is one of them. And I know on a previous podcast, Sultan mentioned that as well. But what I personally used was ACP. Now for me, Chris, would you like me to expand a little bit about on that experience?
Yeah, if you could, because I don't think we've discussed what ACP does.
Sure. So American Corporate Partners pairs transitioning service members up with someone who has successfully done it in the past, A, or B, has not had any experience as a service member and is someone who's in the corporate world who's looking to contribute a mentorship role to someone looking to get out of the military and enter corporate life. So for me, it's a blind pairing, right? I went to ACP, it's a free service, and I said, hi. And I was actually, Chris, I wasn't even signed the dotted line on my resignation yet. I still wanted to talk to someone at ACP first before I even made my decision, right? So I actually got paired with someone during that leave block between cycles, and I started talking to my ACP mentor before I even fully made the commitment to get out. And I asked them a series of questions about his experience, his background, and it was super helpful. And here's what I will say is most helpful about it. It provides you with objectivity, the lens of perspective from someone who does not know you, who can look at you, your accomplishments, where you're standing, what you want to do, and give you honest, raw feedback. It's someone who can say, Dan, that's not a good idea, or I don't think your resume truly aligns with that skill set, or do you really think you're going to step into a corporate role as a plant manager and make $200,000 when you've never been in manufacturing before? You know, it's someone who gives you that understanding of corporate world.
I've heard others that have used ACP mm-hmm. say similar things. Like sometimes the best information is the information you don't want to hear, which is the job you're looking for was outmoded by software 7 years ago.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I really enjoyed using ACP. It was a year-long mentorship, and we connected at least monthly. I can share one thing that I really enjoyed about it that is something anyone can do. What I strongly recommend to anyone who's getting out of the Marines or out of the military in general is get a dedicated notebook, like your transition notebook. So sure enough, I ordered a little notebook, kind of akin to the one that I took to commander's update briefs and things like that. And what I did was I just started writing down all sorts of transition thoughts and questions and things I wanted to ask my ACP mentor or things I wanted to learn from informational interviews that I was about to start with when I was talking to people about transitioning. And one of the exercises I wanted to share here that I found was awesome was people sometimes don't know what they want to do when they're leaving the military. You know, it's for me, I was in that boat. I knew I wanted to get out. I knew that my main thing was that I wanted to have a better work-life balance and I wanted to be there for my family without any, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? I didn't want anyone having a say-so past work hours as to where I'd put my time, right? And that was my main thing. So one of the things that he asked me to do was not write down what I want to do, because I didn't know, but write down the things you don't want to do. And it's funny, I actually have my binder right here, my little notebook, right? And I'm looking back at notes from 2020. And I just, sure enough, I wrote down a whole list of things, right? Accounting, finance, anything crunching numbers, cubicle job. Like, I didn't know what I was writing. I knew HR, I wrote down, but the only thing I knew about HR was like Toby from The Office. You know, I just knew, I had no idea what HR did. I just knew that that didn't seem fun when Michael Scott was yelling at him, right? So I had this kind of gap between my understanding of reality on the outside world, and I needed to put that down on paper. And it was an excellent exercise for me to identify what I think I did not want to do and then be critical about that. And one of those things I wrote down was recruiting and sales. Those were things I was pretty sure I didn't want to do. And one of the reasons is because sales, when you hear sales, right? It's, you know, hey, I'm trying to reach you about your vehicle's extended warranty. Or, you know, it's like, it conjures up sometimes a bad mental image of a career.
Yeah,
right?
Like Alec Baldwin yelling, always be closing, you know?
Yeah, right, right. So for me, that exercise was super helpful. And if anyone's listening to this and they're like, you know, they want to take something away, that's one thing I'd mention. It's a useful tool. It's something you can do while you're transitioning. Write down things you don't want to do and then talk about that with your mentor or with multiple people and then prove yourself wrong. So, yeah,
because you might be making poor assumptions as to what the job entails, you know, because, and I think one of the cautionary tales, and maybe you can explain the cautionary tale or how to avoid it, is kind of what in our last episode, Sultan said, sometimes people reject the idea of certain jobs without really understanding what they entail. And you might be passing on a great opportunity. And I know you're a recruiter now, so sure. I'd kind of like to know how you avoided passing on a great opportunity.
Right. And that's leading to the next thing, I think, is that informational interview. And that is huge. So for me, my first thought was maybe I will go be a GS employee and I could search USA jobs and then leave PI one day in uniform and come back in a suit and be a GS Joe. You know, I would assume the role of a GS-12 doing something, hopefully logistics, maybe, I don't know, ops, right? So that was my kind of first nebulous thought of like my next step. I began doing informational interviews on base with GS employees. And I talked to them, and it did sound like a good life. I don't want to knock it at all. But when I talked to a colleague of mine, he put it really well. He said, if you're going to break up with a girl, don't date her sister. And I was, yeah, that's true. I was leaving the Marine Corps. Why would I go into federal service? So some of the reasons I was leaving the Marine Corps was replicated in federal service. And I saw that. So for me, that ended up being not something I wanted to do. And I found that out by informational interviews, right? The next thing I did is progress that thought and started talking to people who did consulting, right? Like, what is consulting? Everyone's doing consulting. First off, no one knows what it is. I'm kidding, but there's lots of different jobs out there, right? So I connected with people who work at places like Deloitte, connected with people who were operations managers, who were recruiters, and I just picked their brains. I talked to them about what life was like, and that was a very useful thing for me to do.
So how did you get from those informational interviews to a more clear path on what you wanted to pursue?
Sure. So with that being said, a lot of that unveiled that opportunity can sometimes be driven by locality, right? By geographic location of where the job is. And a reality is a lot of service members to find the job they want may have to move for that job, right? It's not always going to be in Buffalo Barn Township, North Dakota, where you came from, right? It may be you have to go to a city to fulfill the role and experience that you're looking for. So for me, I started immediately talking to junior military officer placement firms that are all out there. There's multiple different type of recruiting agencies that focus and cater to military transitioning into the civilian world. And as I spoke to all of them, they said, yeah, sure, there's opportunities here, 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 and here. And when I brought that to my wife and I said, well, we can go here, 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 and here. She said, I want to stay here. I think we have a great thing going. I like this place. We have friends. We have a church. You know, I have a job. And I think we just stay here. And so that became very clear to me that my location was not going to change. So I began looking at commuting distance. And with that being said, one of the things I did was I looked into SkillBridge and I went to the website, and you can search by location. And I scrolled into Beaufort, South Carolina. And sure enough, there on the dot was Systematic Business Consulting. And that's the company I work at now. So for me, it was a bit of a process of finding out, what do I want to do? Which led me to, where do I want to live? Which was a very big question to get answered. And when that was here, I said, commuting distance, what's available for SkillBridge? I found SBC. And SBC ended up being an awesome opportunity for me to enter into recruiting in a role that provided me a work from home opportunity and lifestyle.
Well, that it seems like finding the pot of gold at the end of a rainbow, because it just seems to meet all of your needs. And I'm presuming that your idea or conception of what recruiting would be like evolved a little bit through your informational interviews.
It did. Yeah, it absolutely did. But still, none of it quite led me to... what I'm trying to say is none of it quite prepared me for what I ended up doing, right? In recruiting. You can learn a lot from informational interviews for sure, but SkillBridge is such a great tool. And if you're able to use it, please do. I was extremely fortunate to be able to use it. And I had a great exposure to the world of recruiting. And we're, you know, like you said in the very beginning, headhunters is commonly used, but, you know, agency recruiters supplement internal recruiters across the country in various different industries and sectors. We just so happen to focus in manufacturing, and I happen to be on the sales side. So the business development side, if you will.
Oh, what does that entail?
Yeah. So that's kind of the thing. When I first started, right, I had some vague concepts of what being a recruiter would be, what sales was, again, right, and what a cold call was, for instance. And I can tell you, the very beginning, it was establishing a basis of clientele from nothing, right? When I first started, I was given a pretty thorough onboarding package. I was taught the basics of recruiting. I was taught the basics of business development. And I guess I should kind of back up and talk about how recruiting agencies are designed. You can have agencies where it's all one desk, right? Like a whole desk operation. And that's where you're doing both the business development and also the candidate sourcing. And you're that one person who does both. In our role, the way that we're designed, we have two people working on one position, right? So one person does the client side services. So I do the development, I find the client, I sign them, I bring them into the fold. We find out what kind of jobs they need help with filling. And then I work with talented recruiters who go out, source those candidates, interview them along the guidelines of what I was able to develop during my time speaking with the client, bring them to me, I speak with them, and then I present them to the client. So at that point in time, they've been double screened to the standard of what the client's expectations are. And upon presentation, right, that's where my client and I work in tandem to get from step one through offer and day one. So for me, in the very beginning, it was very cold call heavy. And I had reached out quite a bit and learned how to, on the fly, also a lot of it's just by experience, right? How to approach businesses and find out what their needs are and, you know, offer them solutions to some of the pain points that they're having. And our solution that we're offering is qualified talent. So that was a natural experience for me. I really enjoy talking to people. I really enjoy problem solving. And I enjoy the project management involved with all the various steps of the recruiting process. So I took to it fairly quickly and was able to build a fairly large client base to the point where I reached a self-sustaining spot where when I was actually out of uniform and no longer on SkillBridge, I had built myself a bit of a business, so to speak.
You had briefly mentioned that you had an onboarding process when you got there. Could you talk a little bit about what that onboarding process was like?
Yeah, it was refreshing. It was awesome. So in my office, right, I ended up getting sent three screens, and one of them is a touchscreen computer, right? And I set up my desk, and on day one, I'm logged in, I'm early, and I'm on Microsoft Teams. And Chris, as you know, in the military, right, where you go from place to place, you have to jump through a bunch of different hoops and SAR forms and get a sponsor to sign this and that before you can log on to your email and all that. Everything just worked, you know? And that was refreshing to be able to just use Microsoft Teams and use Zoom and use these commonly available civilian side programs that everyone's out there using. And so that was initially off the bat really nice. The onboarding was a period of time with myself and our VP of client services where she actually taught me everything that she learned in her, you know, almost 10 years of experience doing this role. And it was a lot of interfacing over Teams and virtual. And then after about 3 days or so of training, they were given, for lack of better terms, they gave me the intent, right? And told me to execute. And it was a very fast run up. And of course there was more check-ins and there was more, you know, training along the way. But once the fundamentals were delivered and you were able to show that you were able to do it, right, you just get to calling, and a lot of it is trial by error.
I want to jump in because I lead the onboarding for my current company. And so This is just right up my alley. And I just would love to know, well, first of all, it's really great to hear that just having a system running like Zoom is just easy. And that's, you're setting the baseline for, you know, expectations pretty low, because I feel like I'm constantly trying to figure out how to make sure the tech is running up and ready to go and always stressing out about it. So love to hear that. But I would love to know, when it comes to your onboarding, when did you feel, when you first started to the moment that you felt that you could actually take on the role that you were hired to do and felt fully capable of doing it?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think that's going to be different for everyone. For me, and this is a trait amongst most Marines, We have a fundamental audacity to believe that we are capable of doing anything. And I felt pretty capable pretty quickly. I was making mistakes, but I made them fast and I learned from them quickly. And I would say in about 3 months, I felt as if it was secondhand. And, you know, of course, I did not know every scenario. I did not have every answer, but I was going to find out. And I was going to study, and I was listening to podcasts, and I was reading in my off time, and I ordered sales books, and I ordered recruiting books, and my company provided a lot of that for me too. But no one's going to provide you with the desire to learn, right? The desire to not only come hungry, but to eat, for a lack of better terms. Mm. And in this world, it's, you know, they say you get to eat what you kill. And for anyone who's in the service and you're considering getting out, and part of the thing you don't like is that you're getting paid the same as the person who's the same rank, doing maybe something that you would consider a lesser job, or maybe they got in trouble and they're just kind of in the S shop waiting to get shuffled out, but they're being paid the same, right? That doesn't exist out here. And that was refreshing, and that was incentive, and that was powerful to me. And I loved it. So I would say about 3 months or so, I really got into the swing of things. And of course, I learned more as I went. But 6 months after, I felt very strong about what I was doing, and I loved it.
You eat what you kill. No, it's great. I mean, because it's the ultimate merit. I mean, because you have results. Like, you either have results or you don't, because you have a quantifiable, measurable outcome. Like you said, have you solved the company's pain points? And now that we've talked about kind of generally what you do, if you could tell us a little bit more about what the manufacturing industry is like, particularly what kind of pain points do they have and what kind of solutions do you find for them?
Yeah, Chris, that's a great question. So manufacturing across the US is so dynamic and so different. I mean, there's just so many different industries, right? I mean, from industrial commercial machinery production to plastics and rubber molding to food and beverage manufacturing. You know, when I first started in this role, I was siloed into the role of food and beverage. So my job was to reach out to a lot of clientele who met that criteria across the country. And, you know, at first I really didn't think that sounded very high speed. And I was like, wow, I don't know if I want to reach out to people who are making bread and, you know, stuff like that. I want to talk to people who are making rockets. And, you know, I when you think of manufacturing, that's not the first thing that comes to your mind, right? But I was very open. I was very grateful for the opportunity. And I immediately started learning about the food and beverage industry. So I can speak most holistically to that. But manufacturing as a whole is... It is all over the United States. It is a growing sector. It is fantastic to see that. I love that we're seeing a renewal of self-reliance in American manufacturing, not just in technology, but in our people, right? There is a awakening, I think, in the importance of us being able to produce from a national security standpoint, but also just from a economic and personal well-being standpoint. It is a social mobility agent, unlike just about anything else that I see out there. And I'm talking about a young technician who graduates high school and says, you know what, I'm going to go a path less traveled, go to a technical school, learn a little bit about these PLCs and VFDs, and maybe, you know, figure out how to use a digital multimeter, and then get to work as a maintenance technician and work my way up. And those people are the, you know, bread and butter of American manufacturing, are the ones who are making it all run, right? And they are in need. They are in great need for a lot of reasons. And I'm going down a bit of a rabbit hole, right? But this is my job, is that I get to understand what is going on in manufacturing across the country and why it is we have so many openings and where that talent gap is and where the talent is physically and how we can bring them to our clients. So there's an understanding there. It's exciting. It's exciting stuff, but to answer the question, right? Manufacturing, tons of different opportunities across the country, everything from that administrative side all the way down to the production side. So you got, you know, top of the list, right, is your, you know, directors of manufacturing, all the way down to your machine operators and everything in between. And all of those people need to be sourced and brought in. I think it's a fantastic industry. I think it's life-changing for a lot of people, and it's booming. It's still a good time to get into it now. So I hope that answers your question. I'm sorry. When I talk about manufacturing, I kind of get excited and strays.
I love it. I love it. You answered the question, and I'll even take the rabbit hole you went down, because it leads to what sounds like a brand new mission with a great purpose statement. I mean, you can walk away saying, I help the manufacturing industry by finding quality talent so that we can grow, so they can grow, and so that ultimately it's a win-win for not only the individual, your company, but also the country, where we can just further advance our manufacturing capability here.
Oh, so true. Yeah. And our mission statement is helping others succeed, right? And I get to be a part of that every day. Well, making a placement every day would be fantastic, right? But it's a small progression, right, of what I do throughout the days. It is. I speak to people from all walks of life. You know, it's not just, I do get the opportunity, and I'm really blessed to have that, to share opportunities with military members, people who've served in the past who are now in manufacturing. But more often than not, I find that I'm working with people who are just so excited about that $3 to $5 an hour increase, or that $20,000 or $20,000 per year, right, increase to take this new role. So it's definitely a win-win for me at the end of the day, my clients, and the candidates I work with.
I've got a couple more questions for you.
Yeah.
For our listeners, I mean, we've got a lot of service members that actually function in technical trades. Maybe not exactly like the manufacturing industry, but are pretty close. So if you're an NCO, a junior non-commissioned officer, somebody that's done a first enlistment or second enlistment, or even a field grade officer or chief petty officer or command master chief, you know, or command sergeant major, where do you see different types of service members making a great transition into the manufacturing industry?
Yeah, that's a great question. I can tell you that every background from the military does bring great traits that employers are looking for across the board. From every background, I think people in the military have some phenomenal things they're bringing to the table. And one is, it may sound kind of silly, but it's hard work. These are 24/7 facilities. The vast majority of them are running three shift operations. It's not unusual to step out of uniform where you were working 12 on 12 off as a, you know, helicopter mechanic, right? I used to be on night crew. I used to do swing shift as a helicopter mechanic in the Marines, right? There are people outside of the military in manufacturing doing these sorts of things. That alone is a barrier to entry, and one of the reasons that some people don't want to pursue this line of work. So coming out of the military, you are exposed to long hours, sometimes uncomfortable conditions. Maybe it's not always going to be temperature controlled environments. Sometimes you're in big and industrial forges where you're making pipe for civilian water infrastructure, right? Or you're outside, or you're at a rubber facility or in a metal foundry, right? So you're used to austere environments, wearing PPE, things like that. You're responsible, you're punctual, you're respectful. There's so many soft skills and good things that people from our military are bringing to the workforce that should not be discounted. Some of the hard skills, though, those transferable things, I find do translate very well. And one of the best success stories I've had personally was, I placed a gentleman who was Navy Nuke E6. He was a technician on a submarine, right? Had done quite a bit of high-level work with very comparable components that was found in a mill that actually produces grain. You wouldn't think it, right? But he knows his way around a digital multimeter. He understands lockout tagout procedures and arc flash training, right? He's not going to get shocked when he touches a three-phase motor, right? He understands how those things work. So we were able to translate him directly from the military into a maintenance manager position, no more than a 30, 45 minute commute from where he got out of the military. And that was, I actually just talked to the director of operations for that plant. I'm working on another position with them. And I just checked in and say, how's that gentleman doing? You know, we brought him to you almost a year ago now, and he's great. He's the exact type of working maintenance manager, supervisor, hands-on type of person that they wanted. If anything, they have to put him back in the office. You know what I mean? That's the kind of thing I'm talking about. Someone who's not afraid to immediately step in, receive the respect of their title as a manager, but maintain it because of their ability to work with not just the people, but the equipment. So that's like an example of a hard skill that translated extremely well. For some of our staff and COs and officers who are looking for more of an administrative route, you definitely can see them stepping into production management roles. Operations is another very strong fit. Some of the things that I would recommend to anyone who's looking at getting out is to begin delving into Lean Six Sigma training. A lot of our facilities offer that. I myself was able to go over to the air station. I got a green belt, right? Green belt training and Lean Six Sigma. I'm a recruiter now. So, right at the end of the day, it kind of matters how do you use it. But if you're going into those operations roles in a manufacturing facility, lean processes, understanding Kaizen and, you know, 5S and getting more efficiencies out of production is huge. So couple that with your ability to lead people and your operations mindset. Sure. Yeah, we could talk about production management, production supervision, maybe even operations management. Sure. Some companies are more open to that than others, but they exist and they're out there. I hope that answers your question.
No, it does. No, I appreciate that. Sis, do you have any other questions?
I just have a funny one. Do you ever go back to your transition notebook that you talked about that you had and look through it and go, wow, am I totally at a 360 here? Because I know you mentioned sales and HR and look where you're at now. So do you ever look back and think about it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that's one of the things I recommend everyone does is you get that little me binder, right? And when you're doing those informational interviews and you're writing stuff down, you can look back in on that. And it does kind of help with perspective in guiding next steps and also helping the next guy up, helping the next person up, right? So to answer your question, yes. And it's funny because I do scroll through it. And sometimes my little getting out of the Marine Corps book ended up coming to Marine Corps meetings. So I'll go from informational interview, talking to my ACP mentor to commander's update brief. We need to make sure we get these PowerPoints updated by the end of the day. Notes.
I'm just wondering that there's major differences between maybe if you're in recruiting right now and one of the roles that you're trying to recruit for also has to manage people and you notice that there maybe is a vet that could really fit this role. And you notice that in the military, they led a squadron or they led many people. And now you have to tell them, this is your next role. And you will also be managing civilians as well. What would you say would be the biggest contrast between managing people in the military to managing people in the civilian world?
And that's a great question. So for me, I would say that there's not too many differences. If you are relying on your rank in the military for leadership, you're doing it wrong. You know, there's a certain extent where your rank should give you the respect that the rank deserves, but you as a person, your character needs to be the leader, right? And Marines are very well attuned to that, and they pick that up quickly, right? Being a good leader in the military is similar to being a good leader out in the civilian world. People pick up very quickly if you're there to serve yourself or if you're there to serve them. And, you know, selfless service is one of those things I see very commonly on a lot of military resumes, like extremely humble servant leader is a bullet point that I see a lot and usually phrased differently, right? But the proof is in the pudding, right? So one thing I can say, everyone wants good leaders. The military has very many good leaders. I've worked with very many good leaders and I'm proud to have worked with them. I hope I was a good leader while I was in, but that's besides the point. What I want to say is if you are transitioning out of the military and you want to find yourself into a leadership position with a company, one of the things you need to do is go research that company, find out their LinkedIn page, find them out online, and go to their about section. Click through their about section, get to their philosophy and get to their core values. Read that. Find out if that resonates with you, because you cannot fake the funk, and those people will understand that and they'll realize that. And when you're in that interview, speak to answering the questions from the interviewer along the lines of what you've learned about that company's core values. And if those jive with you and your answers are in line with their core values, there's a very good chance you'll be getting a call for that next step.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. Dan, we've used a lot of your time. If there was a couple of points that you wanted to leave, or a couple of thoughts, final thoughts you wanted to leave for our listeners.
Sure. Yeah, thank you for that. Networking is not a passive sport. You can go onto LinkedIn and click your way through adding everyone and their mother that you think you might have known from someone else's connections, but it doesn't matter if you don't talk to them, right? So having 500 plus on LinkedIn may look cool from outside perspective, but what matters is when you actually engage with them. So when people say, when you're leaving the Marine Corps, when you're leaving the military, you need a network, you actually need to set aside appointments, interviews, hour-long conversations with people and learn from them. That is the best way that you're going to find out, you know, things I want to do, things I don't want to do, is from the people who are doing it now. Aside from that, I've already mentioned my little get out of the military notebook. That's important, right? But I would say reaching out to the so many different things that are available to transitioning service members, and whether that's a military recruiting agency, and there's a lot out there, but be very aware of the fact that they are there to help you transition and find new roles in the civilian sector. So there's a lot of recruiters who specialize in niche work, right? There's people who recruit for sales. There's people who recruit for medical. There's people who recruit for manufacturing, like myself. If that's what you find you want to do, let me know. And if I can't help you, then I will do my best to put you in touch with someone who can. And any recruiter worth their salt should be doing the same thing, because at the end of the day, we help people succeed. And, you know, that's what I love about my job. So definitely leverage recruiters. There's tons out there. There are niche specific recruiters. Find them. It's very easy. Go on to LinkedIn and just type in, you know, recruiters for whatever industry you're checking out. But yeah, I think that's pretty much it for me. If you can use SkillBridge, do it. Your command's got a lot of, you know, sway in helping you as well. So don't feel like you can't go to them. They should be helping you out. That's part of the complete package, right? Making Marines and then returning them back to the civilian world as better human beings, right?
Yeah, and it sounds like you had a very supportive command. I mean, that's great.
I definitely did.
Yeah. And so before we let you go, if we have listeners that think of questions that we didn't think of, or they want to get in touch with you, how can they find you?
Right, yeah. Well, I'm on LinkedIn. The best way you can find me, just go in, type Daniel Pierce, right? Or I suppose you can use my LinkedIn URL.
You can do that, or I'll put it in the speaker notes as well, or the episode notes.
Perfect. We'll do that.
That's great, Dan. Hey, I really appreciate your time doing the deep dive in the manufacturing industry, talking about your lessons learned throughout your transition. You bring a lot of value and covered some ground that we haven't discussed beforehand. So I really appreciate it. And thanks for everything.
No, Chris, thank you. It was really a pleasure. And Alexandra, thank you for your time as well.
Oh, thank you for being here.
All right. I'll talk to you later, Dan.
We'll talk to you later. Take care.
And Dan Pierce has left our virtual studio. That was great. Your thoughts, sis?
Yeah, no, I thought it was really great. I do want to clarify when I mentioned, when he said, you know, onboarding and, you know, just making sure that the Zoom was set up and he was happy about it. And I said, low bar. It's just, it is crazy, the coordination that is included when it comes to onboarding. And so I am constantly every day wondering what's going to go wrong today. What did I miss? What did I forget? You know, is this person going to be okay with their setup on their first day? How many slacks am I going to get? Wondering, you know, all these questions. And so if I could just lead with more thoughts of thinking, okay, as long as they have their necessary setup and their emails functioning, then maybe this should just be, that should be good enough.
I can tell you from the military perspective, if you got a computer that's running that you're going to use for onboarding and it actually fires up in less than 5 minutes, like that's a win.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's a win. I mean, it's gotten a little bit better, but there are some people right now that are like looking at their laptops in front of them, wanting to throw it through the window.
Yeah.
You know, and some of that is, I mean, some of that is just the nature of some of the software that's loaded on these things to protect from hacking and cyber intrusion. And so it slows things down. So that's when he says like, hey, I got a computer that works. Like, man, I know exactly what you're talking about. That's almost liberating. No, I get it. And I've seen you work your hiney off just prepping for onboarding for clients for the company that you work for too. So yeah, I thought it was great. Now I'm going to have to go blow the dust off of my green monster and start plotting my own thoughts down. Well, this wraps up another great conversation, and thank you very much for listening. If you're interested in supporting this podcast, please follow New Mission Career Transition on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, or other podcast apps. You can follow us on Instagram at New Mission CT, that's New Mission Charlie Tango. We would also love to hear your feedback. You can DM us on Instagram or send us an email at newmissionct@gmail.com. We'll get back to you as soon as we can. If you're preparing for your own transition, know that I'm right there with you. So until next time, stay focused.